How will Mikhail Gorbachev be remembered? The late Soviet leader is seen as someone who changed the world in the 20th century. But how has that change shaped the world? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahlbarra. The death of Mikhail Gorbachev is widely being mourned as the loss of a champion of freedom who helped end the Cold War. But the legacy of the last leader of the Soviet Union is very different at home, where many view him as the man responsible for its collapse. His passing received a cool response in Russia. Many people there regard the war in Ukraine as necessary to regain some of the power the former USSR lost when it fell. Gorbachev died at the age of 91 in a Moscow hospital after 2 years of illness. Andrew Simmons reports.
At 54 years old, Mikhail Gorbachev became the youngest leader of the Soviet Union, and he was to be the last. Few would doubt that he changed the course of 20th century history, although he's revered and respected more in the West than in modern Russia. One of his biggest achievements was signing a disarmament treaty with US President Ronald Reagan that took out a whole class of nuclear weapons. It earned him a Nobel Peace Prize. Joe Biden cited this achievement in his tribute, describing Gorbachev as a man of remarkable vision. He said the result was a safer world and greater freedom for millions of people. Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, said the world has lost a towering global leader, committed multilateralist and tireless advocate for peace. The EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said Gorbachev played a crucial role to end the Cold War and bring down the Iron Curtain. It opened the way for a free Europe. Gorbachev had a huge impact on the course of world history. He deeply understood reforms were necessary and strove to offer solutions. Many Russians see him as the man who stood by as the Soviet Union disintegrated.
His legacy is that he allowed for the peaceful collapse of the Soviet Union. He did not use massive force to keep Eastern Europe in the empire, and for that he deserves credit. But it is not that this was someone who came in trying to undermine the system. He tried to reform it.
Gorbachev used perestroika, or restructuring, to reform a stagnant economy that had seen people short of food and consumer goods. And he used glasnost, openness and freedom of speech that led to parts of the Eastern Bloc rising up against communism. It was the beginning of the end of the Cold War. One state after the other broke away. Angela Merkel, former German Chancellor, spoke in her tribute of the fear in East Germany, with expectation the tanks would roll in. But quite the contrary, it wasn't long before the Berlin Wall came down. Yet now, 30 years on with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, comes the danger of further East-West conflict.
Sondern auch Russland und der russische Präsident Putin.
Russia and its president are digging new trenches in Europe and have started a horrible war in Ukraine. It's now we think of Mikhail Gorbachev and realize what he did for our country and all of Europe.
Gorbachev, hailed as a man of peace, has died at a time when his country is heavily engaged in war. Andrew Simmons, Al Jazeera.
Let's bring in our guests in Moscow, Pavel Felgenhauer, a defense and military analyst, Maria Lipman, Russian editor and political analyst based in Moscow until the Russian invasion of Ukraine. She's now in Munich, Germany. And in Washington, D.C., Donald Jensen is the director of Russia and strategic stability at the U.S. Institute of Peace and former U.S. diplomat in Moscow. Welcome to the program. Pavel, quite interesting the way people are divided over the legacy of Gorbachev. Now, we do understand that President Putin won't be attending the funeral. There will be no official state funeral. Is it because of the prevailing sentiment in the establishment and among many Russians that this is someone who was very naive in dealing with the West?
Oh, Gorbachev was not naive. I mean, I knew the man. We had quite a number of meetings and discussed different things. He was anything but naive. Of course, he maybe his education was a bit, you know, kind of party style, going through the ranks of the party. But still, he was a very shrewd and very effective political operator, which allowed him to get to the tops of the Russian-Soviet leadership. And he was not naive. He had ideas. He believed in them. And that was not only his ideas. That was a group of party top officials who wanted to believe that they could change the Soviet system much to the better, that it was too rigid, that it was running the country into the ground, and that a more enlightened approach would give a new impetus to the Soviet system, which was wrong because, as it's well known, a bad regime gets itself in a very dangerous situation and tries to become better. Bad regimes should stay bad, like, you know, North Korea, and then they can stay for a long time. And Gorbachev believed he could be better, but that didn't work.
Maria, why, on the other hand, Gorbachev remained a champion of freedom, particularly for the liberal Russians?
Well, he remains a champion of freedom, but for a minority. In December last year, a poll asked Russians about most important figures of the Soviet time. And Gorbachev, in that poll, led the list of figures seen negatively by a majority of Russians. He is seen as a person who presided over the collapse of the Soviet Union, who put an end to what, in retrospect, many people see as stability of the Soviet Union. He is held responsible for all that. And this feeling has remained, I think, steady throughout the years since the collapse of the Soviet Union. He may be seen as a hero and as a proponent of freedom in Eastern Europe, where he is his contribution is appreciated, or in Germany, especially in Germany, because he facilitated, of course, the reunification, but not in his own country.
Donald, George Kennan once said that Gorbachev was a miracle. Why is it that in the West he's a hero, in Russia he's a villain?
Well, I very much agree with what Pavel and Masha just said. He did contribute to the end of the Cold War. He did it peacefully. He showed the value of personal diplomacy, and particularly with Prime Minister Thatcher and President Reagan. But as my two colleagues just said, he unleashed forces, and I agree he was not naive. He unleashed forces by these, let's say, middle range reforms that we're dealing with even today. And the paradox of how he's perceived in East and West is at first puzzling, but it ends up really being part of the same change, same transformation in European security that he helped lead, and he deserves credit for that. On the other hand, I think that we have to be very careful not to lionize him. He was a communist, he was a reformed communist, or whatever you want to call it, but we have to be careful to go back to the era, and it coincided almost exactly with the beginning of my foreign service career, so I remember it very clearly, that he was not a Democrat, as people often said, even this week. He was not a Democrat. He was a believer in a better Soviet Union, as Pavel and Masha said. And that's something that for us in the West at the time was very difficult to understand.
Pavel, could you explain to us the very nature of the relationship between Putin and Gorbachev? Because somehow you get a sense that Putin was always very cautious in choosing the right words to describe or qualify Gorbachev. And Gorbachev, at the same time, was very cautious in his criticism addressed at Putin.
Well, Gorbachev apparently tried to kind of build the relationships with Putin was not very successful, and Putin didn't want him anywhere close or in any position of influence of any sorts. Putin owes his power to Boris Yeltsin, who picked him together with his entourage as a successor. And Putin is basically continuing the Yeltsin Russia as it was built under Yeltsin, and then it kind of came in Putin. Gorbachev was a sworn enemies, they were with Yeltsin, and Putin to some extent inherited that. And also right now, when Gorbachev passed, Putin is fighting a savage war in Ukraine, actually to remake what it's seen as Gorbachev made. Gorbachev presided over the collapse of the Soviet Union. Putin is trying to build it back by blood and steel. So it's not that there's nothing strange that the present Kremlin and Gorbachev had lukewarm relationships. He was not denounced officially by the Kremlin, though pro-Kremlin forces did denounce him as a traitor and so on. But he's also no hero, and he's not, unlike Yeltsin, who had, of course, a state very much funeral. Gorbachev would be a much more private affair. Again, maybe his family also didn't want it to be a state funeral too. That's not clear right now.
Okay. Maria, the 2021 poll that you spoke about, which qualified Gorbachev as the worst political leader in Russia in the 20th century. Is it mainly because of the perception that his policies introduced the collapse of the Soviet Union, which was described by Putin as the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century, or just because people think that he failed in delivering on political and economic reforms?
Well, in retrospect, the Soviet time, and especially the late Soviet decades, are seen by the Russian people, not overwhelmingly, but by a majority, as a good time. As the time when the state took care of the people, when the relations between among people was kind and more humane than today, when people thought less about money, and of course when things were stable and people could rely on the habitual safety net. And Gorbachev is blamed for actually undermining all that. I would add just a couple of words to what Pavel said about Gorbachev and Putin. To Putin, Gorbachev is almost a traitor because he gave up on the gains, territorial and political, that were made by his predecessors by giving in and giving up control over Eastern Europe, and then presiding over the collapse of the Soviet Union. But that's Putin. To people, I think it's more about how he put an end to that period that is seen today almost as a golden era in the Soviet history.
Donald, the fact that he managed, along with Ronald Reagan, to scrap the entire class of nuclear weapons in Eastern Europe, could that be seen as his biggest political contribution?
Well, I might have once said that, as you know, that I was an inspector on the treaty myself, personally, but the treaty's no longer in existence. So it was a major contribution at the time that lasted for several decades. There were innovations in that treaty, most notably on-site inspections, but that now is under a cloud, given the drift and the increase in distrust between the two countries and other geopolitical factors, such as the rise of China, which have made that kind of arms control somewhat obsolete.
Pavel, was Gorbachev in a way or another a victim? Because the hardline communists, starting from the late 80s, were colluding, working hard to try to discredit him, because they did understand that if he stayed in power, they will lose all the privileges they have been having for quite some time.
Well, it was not really that straightforward. When Reagan and Gorbachev began to end the kind of worst part of the Cold War and agree on nuclear disarmament treaties, Gorbachev had full support of the Russian military, Soviet military, and most of the ruling communist elite. They were still so frightened by the American new land-based cruise missiles, Tomahawks, and by the Pershing 2s. They were so afraid that they won't have enough time to reach their bunkers if the Americans suddenly attack. And they almost came to an exchange of nuclear blows in 83 during Able Archer exercises. So Reagan put forward the zero option, that was seized in Moscow. And that was not just Gorbachev single-handedly. Mm-hmm. It was the Russian general, Soviet general staff, everyone was behind it. And when he began this perestroika and glasnost, actually, he also began uskorenie, which mm-hmm. means swiftness. That was increasing dramatically the production of weapons and procurement of weapons. So he was playing on all the fields, and he had a lot of support. The system began to disintegrate economically because also the price of oil collapsed. And then turned out to be isolated in the end when different parts of the Russian Soviet elite decided that without the Soviet Union, they'll be better off, that they can privatize mm-hmm. a publicly owned factories and oil fields, and that they'll be much better. So even in the Communist Party, I mean, it disintegrated, had almost 20 million members. It disintegrated with a whimper because no one was really much about ideology. It was about dealing up the Soviet pie.
Okay. Maria, so this is someone who did understand that the political and economic structure of the Soviet Union could not stand any longer, and that it was about time for change. What happened later is what people are still debating. Did he lack the courage to implement the reforms, or ultimately he was isolated, unable to undo on his own an empire of its own?
Well, I would say Gorbachev can be celebrated for good intentions and for his belief in freedom and for the fact that he actually got away from centuries-long tradition of the overwhelming control of the state. But he had wrong ideas about so many things, including the economy. He thought that somehow Soviet socialist economy could be preserved but reformed. Wrong. He totally underestimated the nationalist drive. He underestimated, I think, many things about foreign policy as well, not realizing that Soviet retreat would mean the advance of the West and NATO. But economically, it was something that was felt immediately because people in the Soviet Union, as Pavel said, were overwhelmingly supportive to begin with mm-hmm. of what Gorbachev was saying. But when the reforms began and things were falling apart, so many people grew disappointed. And I think later on, they resented themselves for being so naive and believing that change was possible if only they trusted their new leader. But instead of resenting themselves, they, I think, now have very negative feelings toward Gorbachev.
Donald, so this is someone who wanted to introduce reforms, but at the same time he was adamant about the need to send tanks to the Baltic states and to Azerbaijan to clamp down on the protesters. Was it just because we failed to understand the very nature of or the very character of Gorbachev?
I think that Masha and Pavel are very correct. He cracked down in the Baltic, as you just said. He tried to deal with the forces he unleashed himself, which led to Boris Yeltsin, ultimately to Vladimir Putin, to send this Russian nationalism, which had been suppressed by the Soviet regime. And we have to keep that whole complex picture in mind as well. He could not any longer maneuver once Yeltsin won the leadership, the support of most of the Russian population. But I wanted to add one more point, which we haven't talked about, which is to say that I think the West fundamentally misunderstood what was going on at the time, just as we misunderstood what was going on in 91, seeing it primarily as a democratic breakthrough against the Soviet regime. It was not. It was a much more complicated phenomenon than that. And as Pavel just said, the issue of Communist Party money, Soviet money, which was sloshing around the system in the mid-80s, in the late-80s, and ultimately which gave rise to the oligarchs and all many of the other corrupt unpleasantness we see now. Corrupt by comparison, even with the corrupt past, the U.S. and the West had really trouble understanding this. And thus, I think we misunderstood Gorbachev and what was happening, just as we misunderstood the Yeltsin apparent triumph in 91.
I have a few other angles to cover with you. Pavel, Gorbachev said it was about time to pull out from Afghanistan, and many thought this was going to reshape foreign policy. Now Putin is launching a war in the Ukraine, and many are saying this is just exactly what Gorbachev feared, which was an expansionist policy that would threaten the very stability of the international order.
Well, I would say when the Russian-Afghan almost a decade of war began, we were actually lucky, because instead of going to war with NATO in Europe, we went into Afghanistan, got our nose red and bleeding, and then went out, and it was became clear that we're not ready for a big war. This time again, for more than 10 years, Russia was building up its armed forces for a big war in Europe. Then they sent them into Ukraine, believing that they'd overrun it very swiftly, and that's what the Pentagon and many in the West believed too. But that didn't happen. And again, we're lucky, because we're not—we're fighting a proxy war, as the one in Afghanistan, a proxy war in Ukraine, instead of fighting a direct big war in Europe. Okay. An all-European war.
Maria,
so we're lucky, and hopefully that's going to end up like the Afghan-Russian adventure by something less than a total holocaust.
Maria, are there any Russians who would tell you that, you know what, but ultimately, had we not had someone like Gorbachev, there was absolutely no way we would be talking about political parties and freedom of expression in a place like Russia?
Well, this is certainly true. Gorbachev indeed believed in freedom and indeed believed in election, even though it was not an entirely democratic election, those that he presided over. Mm-hmm. He never, ever wanted to be elected himself in a popular vote. But that lasted not for a long time. And this raises the issue of whether indeed Gorbachev was an anomaly, because we are now back to the centuries-long Russian political tradition of the overwhelming centralized control.
Okay. Donald, whether or not this Gorbachev was really adamant about the need to reform the Soviet Union or to dismantle it, how do you see his legacy in the future? Will it live on, or are we turning the chapter of the man and his legacy at the same time?
Well, I will give you an answer absolutely opposite to what I would have answered 5 years ago, or maybe even on February 23rd. I think that his legacy will fade, just like the memory of the coup and its collapse faded with many Russians, because what came afterward was in many ways much more unpleasant than what they saw under even Brezhnev. And so I think it will fade, but I think in the West he will continue to be revered as a man who did advance peace and the security of Europe, such as it was at least until February 23rd.
Thank you. Thank you, Donald Jensen, Pavel Feigenhauer, Maria Lippmann, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Ahbara, and the entire team here in Doha, bye for now.